You are Locked On Ravens, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Ravens, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Ravens podcast. I'm Jacob Troxler here with Matthew Stevens. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens. You can find myself at Trox3 and Matthew at MatthewS_NFL. We're going to talk a lot about the run game today, and Matthew, you know, this is a unit that is playing a lot differently the last 2 weeks that we, you know, compared to what we've seen the first half of the season, really. And it's, again, something worth mentioning because it's the identity of an offense now with a new quarterback. And, you know, it's very unusual that, you know, we see teams make this kind of drastic change mid-season. And you know, it has just been kind of an unusual season, I guess you could say, for Baltimore with some of the pieces they brought in and how things have kind of played out with some, interesting games, but the run game seems like it's becoming a consistent thing for this, offense and this team that hasn't really played consistently this season. Matthew, what are you seeing from this team that it is completely different? And I know you have a, fun fact for us about some of the Ravens running backs.
Absolutely. And first, I got to say, you said a lot better than you did yesterday. So that's awesome. I'm glad you're feeling a little bit better.
Yeah. Thanks to you for actually opening up yesterday's episode because that was yesterday. You know, you get this time of year, you get the cold, you get the cough and all that. So,
oh, absolutely. I'm sucking on a cough drop as we talk right now. but yeah, you know, this run game, obviously, after the bye, dramatically different. I mean, you're talking about against the Cincinnati Bengals, 267 yards on the ground. Gus Edwards comes out of nowhere, 115 yards on 17 carries. Then this week, Sunday, against the Oakland Raiders, 242 yards on the ground. Once again, Gus Edwards breaks the 100-yard mark, hits 118 yards on the ground just by himself. So, you know, some positives from this run game after, you know, 9 weeks of them not doing everything they possibly could to get it right. I mean, it's just we'll talk about that here in a second, but it almost kind of seems like they were purposely sabotaging themselves when you look at what has worked and what they've changed at the beginning of the season. You know, what we noticed or what I noticed throughout the first 9 games was this was an offensive line and a run scheme, a run blocking scheme that was suddenly becoming finesse. There were a lot of pulling guards, pulling centers in some instances, pulling tackles, and leaving the tight end to go ahead and try to seal off the edge, which is an awful idea against, you know, a top defensive end. Just not a good idea. I like Max Williams. I like the tight ends. You should never put them one-on-one with a Pro Bowl defensive end. That's a bad idea. But that's exactly what they were asking, you know, those guys to do, and then stringing things out outside. What we ultimately saw from Alex Collins and the rest of this offense through the first 9 games was things were kind of being strung out all the way to the sideline because there were no holes being opened up because, well, these guys just aren't very good at blocking on the run. That's not what they should be asked to do. It's not what they really did last year. So that was kind of a change in scheme. Now, over the bye week, I don't know what happened, but someone finally got in the ear of Marty Morningwig. Maybe he finally listened to our podcast and was like, ah, well, these guys should just be the offensive coordinator. That's two episodes now. I've put out an idea that we should be the offensive coordinator. But he clearly listened to something because all of a sudden, gone are the pulls. Gone are this idea that guys are moving around. What's happened on the offensive line is they're making one step to the right, one step to the left, or blocking straight ahead. There is no more pulling. There is no more anything. All they're asking their guys to do is take the guys in front of you and see if you can't push him out to the concession stand and buy the man a hot dog on every single play. If you can do that, we're good. And that's precisely what this offensive line has done. Now, you might say, well, you know, that's a relatively minor change. It's not minor when you consider the fact that you've had injuries along the offensive line. James Hurst obviously being out at right tackle, so you're missing that experience. You're putting in rookie Orlando Brown Jr., who has done well but is a mauler. He's not a runner. You've had Alex Lewis dealing with an injury. And you've had Bradley Bozeman or Hronis Grasu or insert any other name that they've tried to go ahead and throw there for that. That has been largely inexperienced guys trying to go ahead and do that. And again, not runners. Ronnie Stanley got injured last week, was kind of battling through some stuff. Once again, you know, Jermaine Illuminor is coming onto the field, inexperienced. Once again, not a runner. These just, it's not the scheme that this team has personnel wise, and it's not the scheme that you know, really works for what Baltimore could and should do, and for the injuries and experience they've ultimately had on the offensive line. So changing that scheme, dramatic difference all on its own. And then we saw the switch over to Gus Edwards, obviously got the start on Sunday against the Oakland Raiders. He is a more north-south runner, and you kind of saw that a little bit in week 11 against Cincinnati Bengals. They allowed Collins to go ahead and run seven times, but the difference was on seven runs, Collins had 18 yards compared to 17 rushing attempts for Edwards, 115 yards, a 2.6 versus 6.8 yard per carry average between those two players. That's the difference. Collins, again, just a little skittish, trying to go to the outside, ends up getting strung out to the sidelines and not making a decisive cut up the field and bursting through. Whereas Edwards, he'll run it into a brick wall. It's fine, but he's going to go ahead and squirt through. He's able to get low. He's able to burst through the hole. And then ultimately, with the offensive line doing what they're doing, you're able to get to the second level where you're able to start breaking maybe arm tackles and get 6, 7, 8 yards a clip relatively consistently, which is what we've seen over the last 2 weeks. So Baltimore's run game, dramatic changes simply by altering the scheme.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the biggest thing, you know, with Gus Edwards, I think he does bring a little bit more of, you know, that north-south kind of mentality there, which, you know, you can definitely tell when you switch to the scheme, you know, that's something you want to have there. And you know, I think that's really important when you just talk about the you know, the numbers of guys that Baltimore has at running back right now. Now there's a clear role for each one of these guys. You know, you have Gus Edwards as the north-south guy. Collins is a complimentary guy to him, it seems like now. Possibly a red zone guy. Maybe, you know, you can use him in a couple other different situations and, you know, on the outside. And then you have Ty Montgomery now as you know, he was a wide receiver in his past days. Now he's running back, obviously a good pass catcher. And they gave him a few opportunities there. I believe one in the red zone also in this previous game against the Oakland Raiders. So, you know, not only do they seem like they have, you know, everything moving up front like they should, but now, you know, the roles are clearly established, it seems. And Baltimore's identity is kind of being confirmed through that in the running game. But real quick, guys, before we get to more on the running game, I want to make sure we give a shout out to our sponsor today. This episode is sponsored by Action Heat. And Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing. It's heat on demand at the touch of a button. So you guys got to check them out this holiday season. Their clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures of 135 degrees. They're powered by batteries that last up to 12 hours. You know, they're perfect for any friend or family. So you guys, you know, looking for holiday shopping gifts. I know I'm terrible at picking things out, but this is going to help me out a lot. You know, it's great for anyone who's working outdoors. You know, you have a snowboarder in the family like I do. You know, anyone who likes to go out there in the cold, but wants to stay warm. You know, you got to get this for them. You know, it can be in anything as far as, you know, heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, even undergarments, heated base layer shirts, long johns. I mean, it just doesn't stop with Action Heat, guys. So you got to check them out. Men's and women's gear in all different kinds of styles and models. So make sure you check them out. And again, we've got a special deal for our listeners at the Locked On Network. You can save on your order, save 20% on your order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. Like I said, that's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. So stay toasty and warm while you enjoy all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. And we thank them for sponsoring today's episode. So, Matthew, getting into a little bit more of the run game, you know, like I said, the identity is clearly there to me. And not only on the offensive line, but also at the running back position. And I think, you know, that helps out a lot in terms of play calling. I think it makes things easier on everybody because everyone kind of knows what to expect. And I think even from a blocking perspective, when you have a guy who, you know how you can expect him to run a certain way on every play, it makes it easier for you to block. And I also think the tight ends roles, you know, we saw Mark Andrews and Hayden Hurst involved in the passing game as well. But it seems like with Hayden Hurst kind of, you know, starting out the year injured and kind of coming on a little bit slower than perhaps people would have liked, now that he's fully healthy and he's gotten a few reps under his belt, it seems like the tight end group has also kind of established roles and has figured things out as the season has gone along, like we kind of expect rookies to do most of the time.
Yeah, you know, that's a huge point, that the tight ends really have been a major factor in the kind of the blocking scheme. And you've kind of seen it, you know, they pointed out in the broadcast, they went ahead and brought both tight ends in addition to the running back there, in this like weird three-headed monster where, you know, as a defender, you know, it's high school football to a certain degree. And what I mean by that is, as a defender, I have no idea where it's going. It's a weird offset eye in both directions now. There is no strong side. There is no weak side when you have, a dedicated blocker on either direction. So now I have no clue where the ball is going. It makes life significantly harder. And we've talked about it all season long, that a little fraction of a second of indecision, it makes an impact. And these guys, when given a little bit of time, Max Williams, Hayden Hurst, even Mark Andrews to a certain degree, Nick Boyle, obviously as well, those guys are actually solid blockers, and they've done a fairly good job this year. Nick Boyle especially has done a pretty outstanding job this year of being able to block guys. Now, again, like I kind of mentioned earlier in this segment, you shouldn't have them lined up on a defensive end, but putting them in the backfield, kind of moving them around and having them block from different positions, brilliant. That's exactly what you should be doing. You have a strength here. Use it. Use it to your benefit there, and run different schemes out of it. So that way, again, a defender doesn't know where you're running the ball. They don't know if you're passing the football. It's just, it all kind of creates this weird mystery around this offense. And that's a large portion of, you know, what's kind of changed since the bye, is they're finally using their tight ends a little bit more efficiently, which is odd considering the fact they've had four of them all season long, and they don't seem to be using them in the first nine games all that well, or kind of sparingly in a lot of ways. So again, this is just scheme changing and them asking the guys to do the right things finally, which is great. Jacob, I know this is a big one for you, and you and I kind of talked about it before the podcast, but we've mentioned it quite a few times in this podcast. In addition to the tight ends doing well, in addition to the scheme, blocking scheme doing a little bit better, in addition to Gus Edwards being a more north-south runner, Baltimore's committed to the run the last 2 weeks. And, you know, they've run it 96 times in the last 2 weeks compared to just 44 passing attempts. Now, keep that in mind. Joe Flacco, when he was in the first nine games of the season, averaging nearly 44 passing attempts per game, 43.4 to be precise, compared to 25.7 rushing attempts per game. So what they've done is literally flip the entire script. They've gone from, you know, running it 25, 26 times, passing it 44 times, to now running it 45 times, 48 times in this instance, to 22 passing attempts. So that flip of the script, that commitment to the run, clearly made an impact. And as if that wasn't enough, you know, if you're saying, all right, well, then it's Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson is the reason for it. You know, he's obviously put up 119 yards in the first one on 26 attempts, got 11 attempts on Sunday against the Raiders for 71 yards, has a touchdown in that game as well. That's fair. But even when you're just talking about the running backs, week 11, just the running backs ran 25 times. 25 out of 53 attempts to the running backs. Last week, or this week against the Oakland Raiders, 32 attempts out of 43 to the running backs. Now, again, why that's important is Gus Edwards this week, 23 rushing attempts. Now you might go, well, that's kind of what you expect out of this team. The last time a running back has gotten 23 rushing attempts or more was 2016, week 6. They have run it significantly fewer times both last year and this year. I don't have Alex Collins' numbers right in front of me, but I think his highest total of this season prior to this was a grand total of 18 times. I'm actually looking it up as we 19 times back in week 6 against the Tennessee Titans. Again, surprise, surprise, 21-0 win. Who would have guessed that? So it's the thing that we've been asking for all season long. Just commit to the run. If you guys just go ahead and dedicate yourself to running more, you're going to be in a better spot. And I talked about it yesterday in yesterday's episode. This is a team that just has this weird desire to try and prove critics wrong, and they listen far too much to what's on social media. At least it seems that way, because, you know, Joe Flacco, is he elite? Is he the guy? Well, we're going to have him throw 40 to 50 times a game. The Lamar Jackson runs too much. Oh, well, the first half, he's going to throw it 18 times to Gus Edwards' 8 rushing attempts. This is a weird team that just has a pretty clear identity, as I think we're identifying right now, but just refuses to go with it. But when they do, it works. And I know that's been a point of contention for a lot of fans, especially today as we're recording this Monday. People not super happy with me saying it's the run game, not Lamar Jackson, that has helped kind of turn this team around. But I think everything points to it being this run game, being the scheme change, being Gus Edwards, being the commitment to the run, being a huge factor, more so than Lamar Jackson being this guy that, you know, confuses defenses. I think when you look at it, everything else points to all those other factors being a bigger contributing aspect than Jackson himself.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's also, you know, important to note that the dedication was not just in the second half of the game when they were leading. I mean, and especially as we move forward here, you know, these last few weeks have been, you know, I think there's plenty of credit that needs to go to them for, like you said, committing to it and changing the scheme and everything. But the Bengals and Raiders, like we said yesterday, they're not good defenses. So now I think the challenge is, will they stay committed to it in the first half against some of these teams? I mean, even though the Buccaneers are bad, you have them as a offense that can throw the ball and score in a hurry. The Atlanta Falcons next week, Kansas City Chiefs, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Los Angeles Chargers, all that can throw the ball and score in a hurry. Now, if you don't run the ball, or at least, you know, try to get your running backs involved, try to get your offensive line in a groove early in the game, and then you fall behind. You know, it seems like we see it week after week in the NFL, where all of a sudden running the ball is not an option. You know, if you're down 3 scores in the third quarter or the fourth quarter, you have to hurry things up. So that creates a problem, and you make yourself one dimensional almost throughout the entirety of the game, because you're not giving yourself a chance to attack part of their defense that, you know, if you think you can win that battle, then, you know, you should definitely do that. And at least, like I said, attempt it in the first half. Now, what did the Baltimore Ravens do this past week against the Raiders? They came out, they ran the ball in the first play. And then they ran the ball 2 out of the first 4 plays, actually. So even something small like that, it gets guys in a groove. It sends a little bit of a message to the defense that, you know, look, this is going to be a balanced offense, and then we're gonna, you know, start the first drive out. Normally, if you're starting the first drive out with a balanced attack, then that's more or less your game plan. I mean, when you a lot of times teams come into a game and they script out, you know, the first 5, 10, 15 plays, what have you. And, you know, if those first 10 to 15 plays are run, you know, 50-50 run pass plays, then I think that tells you a lot about what they're going to try to do for the remainder of the game. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is you don't have a lot of time before your game plan might have to get scrapped. So you better try to run your game plan early, especially against some of these high-powered offenses, because things can change really quickly. So, you know, I know a couple of these teams, you know, especially Tampa Bay, but Atlanta, they're not likely to make the playoffs, but, you know, they can still, like I said, they can still score in a hurry. So that's what I'm going to be looking for. I know they've made a change here the last 2 weeks, but, you know, what do you do in those first two plays, the first four plays, and the first 15 plays? You know, are you balanced? Are you running different, you know, concepts in the run, or are you running the same running play a couple times? You know, how are you attacking them? And that's going to be interesting. Even though some of these defenses, like I said, might not be the best, but these are teams that, you know, if you want to come in and dictate the tempo of the game, it might be good to run the ball early. And that's what I thought that we were going to see going back to a couple weeks, that Monday night matchup with the Rams and Chiefs. I thought the Rams would try to establish Todd Gurley early in the game, and turns out Gurley was a little bit beat up. I think maybe they would have tried to do it more if he didn't roll his ankle slightly early in that game. But that certainly, you know, can change the tempo of the game if you're able to do that early.
Absolutely. And you know, again, that's something that we've kind of said all season long, is if you could be more physical, if you can set that tone initially and then kind of wear it out throughout the rest of the game, you know, come the third and fourth quarter, defenses, they don't want to tackle anymore. They're tired of getting hit. They're sore. They're beat up. They're exhausted. The last thing that they want to go ahead and do is get back out in the field for more plays, for more time. I mean, look at these last 2 weeks, the time of possession in the Cincinnati Bengals game. Baltimore holds it for 38 minutes. In this Oakland Raiders game, Baltimore holds it for 34 minutes. So they're holding it for significantly more time than their opponent. That wears a defense down. I mean, we've seen it, Lord knows, enough with the Baltimore Ravens and their defense over these years, where Baltimore, you know, wasn't able to do a whole lot offensively and would kind of be either hot or cold. And then we saw the impact on the defense in late in games, late in the season, as they just, you know, they couldn't take it anymore. They cannot be on the field for 60, 70 plays. That takes it out on them. And when you're physical up front and physical throughout the entire game, man, that stuff really sparks off in the third and fourth quarter as a guy's just a hair slower. He's just maybe doesn't want to go ahead and really commit to making that tackle. That's when an arm tackle, you run right through it. That's when you're able to go ahead and beat a guy around the edge and run for 39 yards to go ahead and help close out the game. That's the stuff that happens. And it sounds like it's not a lot. It sounds like, well, I mean, that's piddly stuff, but that's the difference between a win and a loss when you've had a lot of games this season and last season decided by just a few points. I mean, Pittsburgh was an 8-point game. Even the Carolina Panthers was a 15-point game. The New Orleans Saints, a 1-point game. The Cleveland Browns, a 3-point game. The Cincinnati Bengals, an 11-point game. You're talking about a score, maybe two in most of these games. Majority of them actually like 3 points or so. That's the difference between you being in the playoffs and you not being in the playoffs. And I don't want to go ahead and exaggerate that and say, well, it's starting out running on the first few plays, but man, it really is setting the tone early and punching a team in the mouth. God, that can absolutely make an impact 60 minutes later.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, real quick before we wrap up, I know you had a stat of the week for us, and I got a one also on the defensive side as well.
Yeah, well, Pro Football Focus hooks us up with some amazing stats. So if you're not signed up to them, go over there. It's worth the time. I mean, I take some of their stuff with a grain of salt, admittedly. But it is kind of cool to get some of the stats and maybe put some numbers to things that hadn't made a ton of sense prior to that. But for the offensive line gave up only 5 hurries to the Oakland pass rush, surrendering no hits on Lamar Jackson. The last time any occurring starting lineman was charged with a sack was back in Week 5 against the Cleveland Browns, and the Ravens now rank 4th in pass-blocking efficiency so far this season with an 83.3 overall grade there. So we're seeing this offensive line now start to gel later on in the season. It's, you know, if you're looking for a playoff run, in the trenches is where it matters, man. So Baltimore kind of getting it done offensively, at least on the line right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, it was cornerback Marlon Humphrey, who earned the highest coverage grade in the secondary for Baltimore in this pass contest. He gave up 3 of 6 passes. Now, you know, not great, but only for 19 yards. So he was keeping things underneath. And, you know, there were a couple of instances where, you know, Derek Carr had some receivers open, but Marlon Humphrey only allowing 19 yards and had a pass breakup in there as well. So, you know, had a coverage grade of 74.7. So Marlon Humphrey leading the way on the defense this past week. And, you know, I know we were talking about the play of Jimmy Smith, maybe, you know, not his finest outing this past week. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how these cornerbacks play with some of these matchups coming up. Obviously, some great receivers on these teams upcoming here, so we should be able to have some great matchups on our hands moving forward down the stretch here as the Baltimore Ravens look to make a run. They're 6-5 right now, and we will be back later this week with a crossover episode. Going to be talking about the matchup later this week and obviously get into a little bit more of the AFC, how things are kind of looking and what needs to happen for Baltimore that might help or hurt them in this race for the playoffs. So stay tuned with us, and thank you for listening.